Hey everyone, welcome to the Jesus Church podcast. You're listening to a teaching from our Sunday gathering. We exist to join God in the renewal of all things by becoming a unified, spirit-filled family that follows the way of Jesus. And our desire is to come alongside you to encourage and equip you for that journey. So if we can serve you in any way, please reach out to us through our website at ajesuschurch.org/connect. As always, we hope that this teaching increases your hope and deepens your faith.
Today we're continuing in our current sermon series, Songs of Hope. Songs of Hope, where we as a church are pressing into and picking up the ancient tool of song, a tool that the people of God have used throughout every generation to reorient their perspective and recalibrate their hope to the character and the promises of God. The poetry and songs that make up about a third of the Bible, they give voice to the different emotions and experiences that the people of God have come up against. And although times have certainly changed, the reality is that the human experience of love, loss, and the need to remember who God is in the midst of all of it remains pretty much the same. Music and poetry, they have this particular and very powerful way of moving and shaping our thoughts and emotions. Just imagine Rocky Balboa going up all those stairs to like Frank Sinatra. Fly me to the moon. It just doesn't have the same ring to like dun 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 dun. You guys know it? Yeah, it's just not the same, right? It changes the moment. Music is powerful. What we listen to, it matters because it directly informs the mental soundtrack. Get this, it directly informs the mental soundtrack that ends up playing in our minds as we move throughout the day. It even impacts the pace at which we move. And in a world that's full of so many different voices, the songs that we find throughout the scriptures act as a metronome that keeps us in rhythm with the way of Jesus. These songs, they help us discover the grounds that we have for hope. Praying and singing these songs give us a foundation and a framework that provides a practical path into occupying a different story. I don't know if you experienced just in singing out that new song. What Jordy and Tim and Vanessa led us through in singing out that song of praise God that they had written after being inspired by one of the songs that are in the scriptures, when we then sing it collectively, these songs have a way of increasing our intimacy and deepening our dependency. This is the power of when we use our voice to declare the truth, not just think about it, although that is significant and important, but declaring, singing out the truth in the midst of our season and circumstances, something begins to shift. Praying and singing these songs are powerful. They lead us into a different story through faith and relationship with God, so that when we are in the midst of the unpredictable and ever-changing reality of our circumstances, we can be anchored in the truth. And not just anchored in the truth, but inhabited by the truth. And in the anxious and fear-ridden culture that we live in, we need hope. We need an anchor. We need the truth to not just be something that we know, but something that we know. And so today, the question that we're asking is, how do we find hope when we can't sleep? How to find hope when we can't sleep? Let me pray. And we'll jump in. Jesus, we just take a moment even now to pause, to slow down, to enter again into the awareness that you are present here with us right now. And Jesus, even in the midst of my mind feeling a bit scattered, I'm leaning into the hope that I have in the promise that your word never returns void. And so, Jesus, thank you that you see and you know every single person that walked through the doors this morning, and you, God, want to meet with them. You want to reveal and walk them into a fresh revelation of your love and truth. And so I just ask, Spirit of God, would you do that? as we open up your word, would it breathe life on the parts of our lives that are weary and burdened and heavy laden? Would you restore our vision? Would you recalibrate our hope towards the gift and the promise of rest in you, Jesus? We love you, and all God's people said, amen. Amen. There's nothing like coming to the end of a full workday knowing that there's a soft pillow and a sea of blankets ready and waiting for you to cozy in and go to sleep. You've worked hard, you've made to-do lists, checked things off said to-do lists, sat through carpool, chased kids, cooked, caught up with a friend, maybe even managed to get a workout in, and now barely able to keep your eyes open, you're ready to fall into bed and fall asleep for those blessed 7 to 9 hours that all the research and specialists say your body needs in order to properly recover and re-energize for the next day. But there you are. There you are, eyes closed, but wide awake, so tired, but somehow wired all at the same time, tossing and turning in that sea of blankets that now feels more like a straitjacket that you can't seem to break free from no matter how comfortable you try to get. And instead of drifting into that restful unconsciousness you've been waiting for, your thoughts take a joyride on a runaway freight train that someone pulled the brakes out of, and now as you stare up at the ceiling, all sorts of worries and what-ifs begin to surface. The tasks left undone from the day, the upcoming deadlines, the debt that you don't know how to pay, the conflict with your colleague, that problem that still needs solving, that Sunday teaching that still needs to be written. And I wasn't pointing at Tim, by the way. I was raising my hand. I can't raise my hand very well. That's for me. And then there's that moment when you're like, I'll just check to see what time it is. Like, surely it's about ready. It's almost time to like wake up and get the day started anyway. And if you're like me, you don't have a phone in bed with you because you've listened to the research and you're trying to cut down on your blue light exposure to improve your sleep quality. So you whisper to Alexa, Alexa, what time is it? And as sweet and serious as she can be, good evening, Shelby, it's 1 a.m. Would you like to know what the weather is today? No. Now, on top of all those other things you were thinking about, the fear and dread of not being able to fall asleep despite how desperately you want to fall asleep is like adding coal to the fire of that freight train, which just perpetuates the whole horrible cycle. In a word, anxiety. Anybody ever experienced something like this before? Maybe just like show of hands. Let's be vulnerable in the room this morning. Okay, good. Everyone look around. If you've experienced that, you're not alone. My man in the back is like, two hands. That was me last night. We're glad you're here. If you need to take a rest, you can sleep through my sermon. I will not take offense. Sleepless nights, they're like a flashing light on the dashboard of our lives, signaling to us that we need to slow down and get curious about what's going on underneath the hood of our lives. And notice I said, slow down and get curious, not slow down and get judgmental or slow down and shame yourself, but slow down and get curious. Take the time to pay attention to that signal that's flashing on the dashboard of your lives. The anxiety, fear, and worry that shows up at night like an unwanted house guest interrupting and intruding on our sleep is our body's way of pointing to the deeper cry and craving of our soul, rest. We long for rest. Body, mind, and heart. God has made us as holistic beings whose parts, body, mind, and heart are made to live integrated. We long for rest. But we live in a culture that wears busyness as a badge of honor. Busyness has become a status symbol in our society that says the fuller the calendar and the faster the pace, the more important you must be. But that pace comes at a cost. It has a price tag. Burnout, exhaustion, stress, anxiety. Some of you are trying to catch your breath right now. I'm not trying to trigger you. Just take a breath. We're going to breathe through it. There is hope at the end of this teaching. 50% of Americans now experience symptoms of burnout. It's become a condition that is so familiar to us that it's hard to imagine a world where you're not perpetually on the brink of burnout. Hustle culture has become the polluted air that we breathe in the West. It's that unrelenting mentality of needing to work all day, every day in order to reach our life's potential. And I'm not harping on work. God has made us to work. Work is not a result of the fall. Work is good. We are made to work. We're not meant to be ruled by our work. Work is not meant to set the pace and the tone of our everyday lives. Hustle culture is a mentality that if we aren't vigilant, ends up setting the pace and the priorities of our lives. This hurried, productivity-obsessed way of living, it leaks out of our warped identity. And I say that again, this hurried, productivity-obsessed way of living, it leaks out of a warped identity where we have located the source of our worth and our value in what we do. Hustle culture celebrates and perpetuates this I am what I do ideology. And it causes us to end up operating more like machines instead of human beings made in the image of God. And because God has made us holistically, that way of operating, it isn't just affecting our spiritual and our mental health, it's impacting our bodies. A group of physicians who came together and did research realized that the way that our culture is forming us is actually leading to our physical breakdown. They said this, generally, stressful events are thought to influence the pathogens of physical disease by causing negative affective states. For example, feelings of anxiety and depression, which in turn exert direct effects on our biological processes or on our behavioral patterns that influence disease risk. Do you catch that? The tyranny of hustle culture is making us sick and susceptible to all kinds of unhealth, body, mind, and heart. And I know because I've experienced it. Talking about sleepless nights is not something that I do haphazardly. It brings to mind a season of my life that was certainly the darkest I have ever walked through. It started with just a few restless nights, and then faster than I saw it coming, it turned into all-out insomnia, barely getting 20 to 30 minutes a night. And I was losing my ever-loving mind. I was desperate. Nights like that when you're up pacing, wondering what you did wrong, if you're anything like me, to end up in a spot like this, and then the shame cycle just begins to eat you alive. Nights like that are horrifying. I was desperate for hope, a way out. And so I don't pretend in any way to offer a silver bullet or a simple solution. Again, I can't help but acknowledge this over and over again. We are holistic beings, and I wanted a silver bullet to solve all of the problems, but the reality is I needed a doctor to show me the things in my life that were out of alignment biologically that were contributing to my lack of rest. And I had to confront the pace of my life and the priorities that my life was orbiting around, primarily work. I had gotten caught up in the current of hustle culture. And as much as I tried to hack my way into a way of getting back into the sleep that my body, mind, and soul so desperately needed, that was only gonna mean me managing symptoms. I needed something that was gonna help me get to the root. And for me, that meant facing the reality that my life was being dictated more so by the pace of the culture that I was caught up in instead of the presence and priorities of the kingdom of God. And for that, again, we pay a hefty cost. Against the backdrop of our cultural reality, true rest seems almost impossible or at best elusive. Ronald Rollheiser says this, "We are a restless people. Restlessness is the opposite of being restful. Restfulness is one of the most primal cravings humans have. We crave rest to the point where we identify it with heaven. Grant us eternal rest. Today, as our lives grow more pressured, as we grow more tired, as we begin to feel burned out, we fantasize more about restfulness. We imagine a peaceful, quiet place. We see ourselves walking by a lake, watching a peaceful sunset, smoking a pipe in a rocker by the fireplace. But even in those images, listen to this, even in those images, we make restfulness yet another activity, something we do. Then we return to normal life. True restfulness, though, is a form of awareness, a way of being in life. It is living ordinary life with a sense of ease, gratitude, appreciation, peace, and prayer. We are restful when ordinary life is enough. I find it so interesting that our body's need for sleep is a tangible and constant reminder that our lives do, in fact, have limits. Let that sink in. Our lives have limits. You, friends, have limits. You're limited. Just think about it. Our limitations include, but are not limited to, our bodies. Despite the illusion that the invention of the iPhone and FaceTime and Zoom have created, all of which I am so deeply grateful for, especially with having family that lives very far away, the reality is that we can only be in one place at a time. We can only be in one place at a time. We're limited by our bodies. We're limited by our minds. We will never fully know. No matter how much you master a particular topic, no matter how much you research it and learn it, your knowledge is limited. We will never fully know. We are not all-knowing. Our personalities are a reminder of our limitation. We all have different capacities. I am introverted, and when I start stacking too many social activities on the calendar, I start operating in survival mode, and I very quickly slip into a scarcity mentality, neither of which bring out my good side. You can just ask my husband. He could tell you about it this week. Season of life and responsibility is another reminder of our lives' limitations. Some of you are in the thick of raising kids, or maybe you're starting college, or you're taking care of aging parents, and you only have so much time and attention to give to things. We are limited. And these are just a few of the ways that we experience the reality of our limitations. But as we just saw, as we just unpacked, we live in a world that rebels against this fact of life. Especially in the West, where we are constantly encouraging and creating new hacks to help us override the limitations of time and space. We are always trying to cheat the system, sidestep the reality that limits have on our real lives. In her book, Liturgy of the Ordinary, Tish Harrison Warren writes this: resisting limits isn't new for the human race. From the very beginning, we've had an animosity toward finitude and boundaries. And their rebellion at any, let's see if this is right on the screen. From the very beginning, we've had an animosity toward finitude and boundaries. You know what, I'm just gonna summarize this quote because I've read it long enough. Unfortunately, it didn't get translated on the screen quite right, and that is my bad. She basically is highlighting how Adam and Eve rebel against the reality of the good limitations that God has set on their lives. In taking the fruit, they rebel against God's parameters and boundaries that he set on them for their good, and they seek to be all-knowing. They seek to be all-powerful. And she goes on to say, I'm gonna pick up in the part that is here. She goes on to say, what if Christians were known as a countercultural community of well-rested people who embrace our limits with zest and even joy? What a good question. As believers, we can relish sleep as not only necessary, but as an embodied response to the truth of Scripture. We are finite, weak creatures. You are abundantly cared for by a strong and loving creator. Sleep is a tangible and constant reminder that we have limits. When that undercurrent of restlessness that you've been carrying with you throughout the day is no longer masked by the dopamine hit of action and accomplishment, and we can't sleep, it's our body's way of inviting us to tend to our soul's cry for rest. And there's good news. Whether your restlessness is robbing your sleep or has just become the background noise that moves through your day as you go about life, the message of Jesus is good news. It's good news because it's a message that promises rest. In Matthew 11:28, Jesus says this, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light." I love how Eugene Peterson paraphrases Jesus' invitation. He says, "Are you tired? Are you worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me. Get away with me and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest." Entering into the promise of rest that Jesus offers is a two-part invitation. And it's really important that we hear and respond to both parts. Part number one is come to me. Jesus says, come to me. This is a call to all of us who want refreshment and whose souls need revitalization. It's a call to bring your whole self honestly before God, including the parts of you that are burdened and burnt out, and to say those things and to bring those parts of you honestly before him. It's a call to recognize your limitations and to admit your need for God. And some of us in the room, we just need to start there today. If you're stuck in striving or shame or sin, the gospel of Jesus says to you that in surrendering your life to him, that in letting go of that lie that says you could work hard enough to earn his unending love and grace for you, when you let go of that lie and you actually lay hold of the good news of the Father's unconditional love for you, it frees you to then receive the gift of salvation, healing, and wholeness that we have access to through Jesus' life, death, and resurrection. If you're here this morning and you've never made that first decision to bring yourself to him, to come to Jesus and surrender your life to him, today can be that day. Jesus is calling. That invitation to rest, to find rest that your soul, body, and mind is longing for is available to you in the person of Jesus. That's good news for us. Others of you in the room, you have come to Jesus and you continue to admit your need for him, but you've neglected or lost sight of the second part of the invitation. The part that makes the promise of God's rest not just something to look forward to when you're dead, but that is good news that you can actually start living into and experiencing right here, right now. The second part of Jesus' invitation is to take my yoke upon you and learn from me. Take my yoke and learn from me. Now, our farming machinery has advanced quite a lot since the first century, but back in the day, a yoke was a piece of equipment that two oxen would put around their necks to shoulder the weight that they were carrying. And this farming tool was a common expression in the first century that rabbis used to refer to their set of teachings and practices on how to be human. It was a rabbi's way of shouldering the often heavy weight of life. That was a rabbi's yoke. Practically speaking, a yoke is an instrument for work. In his book, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, John Mark Comer points out that when Jesus offers a yoke, he offers what we might think tired workers need least. They need a mattress or a vacation, not a yoke. But Jesus realizes that the most restful gift he can give the tired is a new way to carry life, a fresh way to bear responsibilities. Realism sees that life is a succession of burdens. We cannot get away from them. Thus, instead of offering us escape, Jesus offers equipment. Instead of offering escape, Jesus offers equipment. Jesus means that obedience to his Sermon on the Mount, his yoke, will develop in us a balance and a way of carrying life that will actually give more rest than the way that we've been living. I love that line. Jesus doesn't offer escape. He offers equipment that lightens our burdens, equipment that we can learn to live into. Jesus doesn't say, come to me and I'll make you successful. He doesn't say, come to me and I'll even make you sleep. He says, come to me and I'll give you rest. Salvation, friends, is about this rest. And the way of Jesus is rooted and anchored in rest. The overall lifestyle that Jesus embodies and makes available to each of us is rooted in the rhythm of rest that God has woven into all of creation. Do you know this rhythm? Do you know this rhythm? I wonder if we are so caught up in the current of hustle culture that we are so out of step with this rhythm that Jesus has woven into the fabric of creation. After 6 days of work forming and filling the earth, in Genesis 2:1-3, it says, thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work that he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and he made it holy because on it, he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. The Hebrew word for rested in verse 2 is sabbat, which literally means to stop. God himself stops. He rests. He sets the seventh day of the week apart, and in doing so, this is a 1 in 7 rhythm of rest that gets woven into God's design for flourishing, for your flourishing. As the biblical story unfolds, we find another Hebrew word for rest. It's nuach, which conveys the idea of abiding or resting in. And it's this word that I think levels up God's design and intention for rest, because it reminds us of what Jesus has to say to us in John 15:5, this beautiful word picture of abiding. He says, I am the vine, you are the branches. If you abide in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. In other words, striving in your own strength just leads to burnout, but there's a better way. When you abide in me, when you rest in me, you bear fruit. In saying this, Jesus is saying that rest is possible, and it's not just one day a week to take a break from our work. It's actually an entire way of life. Jesus makes it possible for us to return to the rest that God intended for us in Eden. And on top of this rhythm that God established, there's a phrase that gets repeated in the creation account that brings this gift of rest into even sharper focus. In Genesis 1, after each day that God forms and fills the earth, the phrase, and there was evening and there was morning, gets repeated. And there was evening and there was morning. This repeated phrase reveals that the day actually begins with rest. Catch this, the day, according to God's design, actually begins in a place of rest. This is why in Jewish culture, time works a bit differently. They see the day as starting not with the rush of tasks and to-dos, but by settling down and going to sleep. I find that so compelling. It's this understanding of time that has a way of reorienting and even jarring. It's jarring to those of us who measure our days by our own efforts and accomplishments. It shifts our perspective. The Jewish day begins in seemingly accomplishing nothing at all. We begin by resting, drooling on our pillow. Eugene Peterson says, the Hebrew evening-morning sequence conditions us to the rhythms of grace. We go to sleep, and God begins his work. We stop striving. We let go of striving, and we lay hold of the gift of rest that Jesus has on offer. This perspective of time paired with the rhythm of rest that God has written into creation, it reveals God's heart toward us. Don't miss this. He wants rest for every part of you. That is his design. That's his desire for you. And it's that reality that David actually clings to fuel his hope when he can't sleep. Rest is a return to trust. It's a path that brings our body, our mind, and our heart into the refuge of God that promises to protect us and provide for us. And that rest rooted in an abiding trust that says that the certainty of God's steadfast love and faithfulness is actually stronger than the anxious uncertainties of life, is what anchors David's hope in the night when he can't sleep. We're all gonna have anxious nights. Anxiety is part of the emotions that we experience when the stress of life starts to settle in. David doesn't reach for a silver bullet and he doesn't manage symptoms. He reaches deep into the fabric of the rhythm that Jesus wove into creation, and he holds it up as his hope when he can't sleep. God's design and desire for rest. So how do we enter into it? How do we practically enter into this rest that our anxious hearts and minds and bodies are longing for? We don't have time to do a whole talk on the practice of Sabbath, but I highly encourage you to dig into some resources. John Mark's book, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, is a great starting place. But to end our teaching, I just want us to look at Psalm 63 as a place to start. This is a song. David, in the middle of the night, lying on his bed, is confronted with the anxious reality of an enemy that is after him. And in that place, he does one thing. I don't have three things for you today. I just have one thing. I just have one thing that I want you to take with you throughout your week that I believe the Lord wants to use to recalibrate your hope in the midst of anxiety. And that one thing that we see David do is remember. He remembers right in the center of this psalm, verse 6, on my bed, I remember you. I think of you through the watches of the night. Because you are my help, I sing in the shadow of your wings. You see, David's hope, it was anchored to the reality of God's character and his promise of rest. He knew that God was a God who never sleeps. In another psalm, it says that God never sleeps or slumbers. And David here in the middle of his restless night, he calls to mind the reality of God's character, the faithfulness of God. In the verses before, David says, I've seen you in the sanctuary. I've beheld your power and your glory. He knows that God's way is better than life, that God's love is better than life, and he's recalling the faithfulness of God. You see, anxiety, it has this way of giving us like a kind of amnesia. It's like we forget all the ways in which we've seen God move and show up. And this is why song is so powerful. And I think the gift this morning is to see and enter into both the lyric of David's psalm, which is a call to us to remember God's character, but then to also take a step deeper and declare those truths out loud, to sing them. David isn't just thinking these thoughts in his mind, he's writing them down and singing them out, or else we wouldn't have them to read today. There's something about speaking the truth out loud that recalibrates our hearts and our minds and our bodies. Just in the same way that when you love someone, you can't keep it in. And when you speak out your love for them, it draws you into greater intimacy. So does this tool of singing draw us in to deeper intimacy with Jesus, greater dependency on him. And in that place, we can find hope.
Thanks for listening. For more resources and to partner with us through giving, visit us at ajesuschurch.org.